This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to By the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Joining me, as always, is my fellow book nerd, Sharmila Ganesan.
Hello.
So today we are excited to have a guest with us, somebody who's a returning guest, actually. We've got Karis Lok, who is an illustrator. We previously spoke to Karis about, well, exactly that. Today we are focusing on the process of illustrating maps. Karis has illustrated titles like recently The Foxglove King, The Sword of Kaigan, The Bone Shard Daughter. Karis, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back. Really excited to be talking about maps with you.
So the last time you came in, you spoke actually a little bit about how much you did enjoy illustrating maps. Let's revisit that. What do you like about map making in particular? What's enjoyable about it for you?
Well, honestly, one of the big draws for me is I get to read manuscripts early before everyone else. And that's a huge part of being an illustrator as well. But it's also the whole thing about the author has their world, and it's kind of your job now to translate it into visuals. And I can talk about the process a bit later on, but I enjoy just reading the text, trying to imagine what a map might look like, how the visual cultures of the world may translate into the map, and, you know, just nerding out about small things like climate, and if the wind is coming from this direction, that means the mountains have to be there, to cast the rain shadow, you know, things like that.
So let's take a couple of steps back, right? How did you get started with this with illustrating maps?
Yeah, so I think growing up, I was always reading a lot of fantasy books with maps, right? There's, you know, Lord of the Rings, Earthsea, Narnia, and I also played a lot of video games, which are also very map heavy. So I think in 2017, I took an online illustration mentorship, and the guest for that mentorship was the art director at Orbit, which is a, you know, sci-fi fantasy publisher. So Lauren, who's the art director, gave the class a few briefs, and one of the briefs was a map. So I chose that brief to work on, discovered that I really enjoyed the process, and Lauren said, you know, there are not that many illustrators who do maps, so if you really enjoy it, that's a sort of thing that you could keep doing as a career.
So you mentioned that you work primarily in sort of sci-fi fantasy, and I think that that's usually where we see maps, you know, especially at the start of the book, after the title page. But having said that, they can also often feel rather overlooked, like they're there as part and parcel of what you expect from the book. I guess the question is, what function do they have for the reader, in your opinion?
Yeah, so maybe, okay, I'm going to start thinking about maps in the real world. So in the real world, they are basically a tool to kind of show someone's perspective, right? It's how a culture sees the world. Do they think about it in a bird's eye view? They think about it in, you know, a different perspective. So you have maps that show like cosmology, how we think about the universe, travel, empire, communication. Like, I need to draw someone a map. Before Google Maps, that's how we would get around. You know, like, draw me a map to your house. And in books, there's kind of the same function. It also shows you the perspective of the world, especially if it's a diegetic map, a map that comes from the culture of the book itself. It can do storytelling. Like, you know, some maps have inset pictures with characters, motifs and symbols. It sort of gives the reader like an anchor geographically in the world. But I think nowadays, what I see a lot of maps doing is also, you know, I don't want to use the word vibes, but it gives gets across, you know, aesthetic vibes for the books. So you see a lot of readers who post it on Instagram and they open up the book to the spread where the map is. And it's become a kind of marketing draw as well, I think, for certain titles.
Actually, can I follow up on that? Because I was at a museum recently and looking at maps from, oh, I don't know, I think maybe the 15th or 16th century, something like that, in which there were a lot of undiscovered places. And so places that simply weren't on the map in the sense of what we now know as the map of the world. And I guess I'm curious, you know, you were saying that it represents a point of view, particularly of a group or a culture. How do you think about that in that there are elements of the world the people fictionally making the map might not yet be aware of?
I mean, part of it comes from maybe the story. So, you know, the author has said that it happens in so-and-so places. We might assume that the other parts are on the map, but they don't go to, you know, maybe that's not as shown. I think sometimes it comes across in the visual. So, you know, in old maps, you have all those monsters and, you know, like unknown lands. And sometimes illustrators use those devices in maps as well. Yeah, I think it really depends on the map story, the story of the novel.
I wanted to extend the point you were making about people finding these maps as a way to almost share and talk about the book, particularly with social media. And I was wondering whether that's also linked to the fact that you mentioned Google Maps. Maps are not really a common feature in our lives anymore, or rather intricate, interesting maps. We're much more used to the digital, very basic utilitarian style. Do you think that is part of the reason why maps in books have even more of a kind of kitschy, shareable quality to them?
Yeah, possibly. I think this goes hand in hand with maybe things like book crates, right? Mm. Where they have a ton of extra art, extra elaborate covers, more features visually.
And I guess the other thing is, when it comes to maps, considering the complexities that we're covering, what challenges do they pose to the illustrator, especially because they come right at the beginning?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things. Sometimes it's also figuring out what's important to highlight on the map, because you can't prioritize everything and you do want to guide the reader through it. You know? So what should the reader look at first? What are interesting details but maybe shouldn't be as visually prominent and that they can kind of discover later on? So I guess maybe it's a good time to go into the process a little. So what happens is I usually get a brief which talks about, this is a summary of the book. They will send me the manuscript and usually an author sketch. So this sketch from the author is usually quite simple. It just shows, locations relative to one another, what the shape of the land masses are. Sometimes authors will do it on grid paper so that they're paying attention to scale. Not always. So with the rough map from the author, I start reading the manuscript and I'm taking notes as I go, not just about location, but also like characters. Does it say things about, the architecture, the food, the world, the cultures? Maybe a particular house has a certain heraldic device that they use. So I'm just jotting down all these notes on like a spreadsheet like this, and it looks super rough. Then I kind of sit down and think about what visual style would work for the map. So if it's, an Asian, East Asian-inspired map, then obviously I will start looking at Chinese old maps, Japanese old maps. If it's a different world, for example, Fox of King, I think the part of the brief was, Gothic religious trauma vibes. And for me, immediately, okay, I know, like that stained glass. And stained glass windows are mentioned in the book as well. So it's a very kind of neat tie-in. So once we decide the style, I then start doing research, like compiling a mood board. We make a rough sketch and show it to the art director and the author, and usually they have feedback notes. And I will also have questions like, should we have a label for this town? What goes in this area? What sort of climate is it? Or is this part of the city that's not described in the book? Like, is it high-rise or smaller buildings, that sort of thing? Then usually after that, I then dive into making a more refined sketch, and then the feedback process continues until the final sketch is delivered.
So I'm so interested about this process between author and yourself. I mean, of course, any illustrator working on a book would have those kinds of experiences. But when it comes to something like drawing a map of the author's world, how much input do they give you versus how much creative license do you have?
I think it would partly depend on whether the publisher is the one approaching me or the author is commissioning me directly. So if it's if I'm working directly with the author, like I did for the Book of Tea Map with Judy Lin. So she sent the entire info packet with, these are all the different districts, are the names, what happens in that district. There were photos of like what it looks like, sort of. And that's a very direct one-to-one kind of conversation. With the publisher, normally you're talking to the art director. And there is a good reason why there are editors and art directors in place to kind of mediate between the author and the artist. And sometimes the publisher wants to have a say, for marketing reasons. So it also depends on the specific book. But I found that most authors are quite happy to kind of let me, propose ideas for their map, and especially to kind of propose visual styles for their map. Because I suspect at this point, a lot of the people who are coming to me for maps want maps that don't look like typical fantasy maps, which is to say, very Eurocentric, Tolkien-inspired kind of maps.
We're speaking today with illustrator Karis Loke about the process of illustrating maps for novels, for books. Let us know, do you pay attention to the maps that often fill up the front pages of a fantasy or sci-fi book? Are there any particular titles that you want to highlight in this area that you think did a really good job? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Behold Freedom, Malaysia. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Buy the Book with Lynn and Sharmila. Our guest today is illustrator Karis Loke. We're speaking to Karis about map making. So we've talked a little bit about laying the groundwork in many ways. What are some of the projects you've worked on that you think were particularly intriguing or perhaps challenging?
I think challenging was probably the very first map I did for Orbit, because it's the first time you want to do a good job so that they come and work with you again. And so for me, it was kind of figuring out how to, you know, do a map in like a Chinese painting style and then lay out all the labels so that they don't clash with each other. And I was hand lettering everything to kind of look a bit like, you know, brush calligraphy. So it was a lot to kind of do as a first map and even just trying to handle such a big file in Photoshop. So, you know, technical challenges-wise, that was probably challenging. And then something interesting would be, I think, the latest map line. So the Foxglove King map is a stained glass map, which looks very different from, I would say, most maps out there. And so the challenge there was to figure out, you know, how do you make a really, really ornate map that still reads very clearly from a distance and then up close? Like, how do you control the visual hierarchy so that people first look in the middle and they see, okay, this is the landmass, and then they look at the sides. And the biggest thing there are the two deities. Mm. And then they go lower to look at the smaller details and like figure out the story that way. So it was a lot of carefully balancing colour and value, you know, and shapes and sizes to get that effect.
So you mentioned weather patterns earlier, but really the art of drawing a map requires so many different sorts of knowledge and skills, right? Geography, topography, map making, drawing to scale, weather. How did you acquire the requisite knowledge for all this?
Okay, to be fair, drawing fantasy maps is not the same as drawing, you know, like a National Geographic map. So we're a lot less concerned with, you know, technical accuracy. And I would say even, you know, your Kajian Tempatan geography secondary schools studies should be enough as a kind of basic knowledge. So for me, I think what's probably more important is enjoying reading a manuscript, because you need that attention to detail. And then the ability to figure out like what you need to know for a specific map job, and then how to learn it really quick so that you can then, you know, do that map. So if it's something like how to hand letter in a certain kind of style, you have to figure that out fast and then put it to work. Or if it's a map where the author is quite particular about scales and distances, you know, how to figure out how far does someone on horseback travel, you know, in a week, and then make sure everywhere on the map is kind of to scale for that.
So before we continue to talk about style and influences, you have been talking a lot lately online about the viability of being an illustrator in Malaysia and whether it's possible to continue pursuing it as a career. Talk to us about that.
Sure. So I think particularly with maps, like, you know, one question could be, how come all the maps I've done have been for, you know, overseas publishers? Which is a really good question, and it's worth thinking about. So I think there are a couple of factors there. One would just be it's a question of scale, right? Like, how many sci-fi fantasy books are published a year in Malaysia? Not very much. So the demand is sort of a bit lower. The second factor would be budget, and that's kind of tied into the other factors, right? Is the budget enough to, you know, make it a viable use of my time as a freelance artist? The third one would be a kind of general appreciation for the role of illustrations in books, because that also drives the budget. If we understand what it can do, we are more likely to put money into it. And I think the fourth one would be sort of the working process. Not every local publisher has, you know, an art director or editor who knows how to work with artists, knows how to pick the right artist for a story, and knows how to kind of, yeah, you know, just distill the book down to what it needs visually. And I think all these factors are kind of interrelated, right? Not enough budget, we can't hire an art director. no art director, we can't find the right artist. You know, not no appreciation, people don't want to pay extra for books that are well made. Yeah.
I think a lot of people may not necessarily know the workings of the global publishing industry, right? And might be quite surprised to realize, for instance, that an illustrator based in Malaysia, from Malaysia, could be, for instance, illustrating covers or maps in this case for titles from really many different parts of the world. I was just wondering whether you could speak to that in terms of how that kind of connection, how those kind of connections end up happening, and whether that's something that there is a potential for more illustrators who are working here.
Yeah, actually, you will be surprised to know that quite a lot of covers nowadays are done by Malaysian illustrators. A lot of the recent YA fantasy ones are all by Kelly Chong, who's Malaysian. So I think the one thing that's really helped me has been Twitter, because that's where the publishing world is, and not really on Facebook. Instagram is a lot more kind of visual-oriented, less talking, but Twitter is where the editors, the writers, the readers all are. So I've gotten a lot of work from people seeing maps on Twitter and then contacting me. Part of it is also authors who tend to write in similar worlds or similar genres. So if it's, you know, like East Asian maps, which I've been kind of doing a lot, then someone else who's also writing that kind of story will then be like, hey, I need something like this, and this person can do it. So part of it is just kind of word of mouth on social media. Another part of it is directly contacting publishers with your portfolio. So figuring out who are the art directors at each place. Have they published things that seem similar to what you want to do? Then sending an email to them, very brief, you know, like who you are, what you like to work on, maybe some books that they have done before that you really liked, and then just link to your portfolio. 3 to 4 sample images, so like a short and sweet kind of email. A lot of these connections, they happen, and sometimes it takes years before you actually do get a job. Like from the time I did that first map in class for Lauren, so it took about 1 year after that for her to come back and say, okay, we have a book where we think, you know, you could do the map for.
Karis, can I ask you a blunt question? Because I think that through the course of our interview today, you've explained the process, and it's clearly one that takes a fair amount of personal resource, right? Because you're communicating with people, you're doing the research, you're coming up with visual styles, you're going through that feedback process, and all that is actually before you put, I was going to say pen to paper, but I'm not actually sure what the tools are, but that's before you begin the process of illustrating. And I think my question is simply, do you think that amount of work at the moment is being accurately and fairly valued?
Okay, so well, let's just talk like straight numbers, and you can find these numbers online. Lightbox.info has a whole bunch of rates that are crowdsourced from illustrators, and that's a good resource for, you know, Malaysian artists who want to know how much the rates are overseas. But I would say usually for a black and white map from a big five publisher starts at $1,000. If it's a colour map, you know, 1.5, maybe up to 2.5, depending on how rush they need it. And then for each subsequent time they reuse the map in the second book, the third book, the paperback edition, you get a reuse fee as well. So it's a kind of gig which sort of gets you money, but like slowly over time. You have the upfront fee, and then you get some later on. So in the US, if I were in the US with US level bills, that would not be a great amount of money for the kind of work that goes into it. But thanks to the currency exchange, then being in Malaysia, yeah, I think that at this point, it does kind of work out.
Mm. I want to talk a little bit about the beautiful, the pretty aspects of what you do, the artistic visual influences, right? You've used, as you've mentioned, stained glass windows, you've used Japanese woodblock prints, you've used Chinese paintings, scrolls, all as influences for the various types of maps you've done. What sort of research goes into all this, and how do you translate these influences into something that actually fits the narrative of the book?
Yeah, well, so I do spend a lot of time just browsing Instagram and saving whatever, you know, I come across that looks interesting, reading a lot of books, like going to secondhand bookshops and seeing if they have old maps there, and sometimes just traveling and, you know, seeing things in museums and making notes for later. So the stained glass one was because I happened to be in Ireland, and I saw the work of this Irish illustrator who's also a stained glass maker called Harry Clark. And he has this very distinctive style that translates, you know, across both pen and ink and stained glass, where it's really very ornate and detailed. But being stained glass, you know, you have to look at it from afar. So it works both, you know, from afar and up close. So when I saw that, I kind of filed that away in my head for later use. And a lot of things are like that. So I see something, I kind of make a note of it, and maybe a few years later, come back to it. So as to, you know, how you actually translate the style, for me, I try to do it very systematically. So sitting down and looking at the thing and being like, okay, how did they make this? What tools did they use? How would they draw, like, say, a cloud? So, you know, in Chinese painting, there are certain ways of drawing a cloud. And then what colours would they tend to use? How would they tend to do the composition? And then once I kind of looked and thought about that, then I can try to put my own spin on things, but then use some of the same techniques and approaches that, you know, those artists before me are using.
And have you used Malaysian influences on a map? I mean, and have you seen examples of this that have been done well?
There's a upcoming project I'm hoping to be able to do that on, but I can't say anything about it now. I do like Remena, so Remena Yi, who's a Malaysian comic artist, like she did a map for Rimba, and it's a map about bats in Asia-Pacific cultures. Because it's, you know, about cultural influences, there are very nice visuals of like bats in window carvings, bats, siku keluang, like the motif, the kind of angular motif in Malaysia. I think Mankau and ZX, you are doing really interesting things with their TTRPG, so they make a lot of maps as well. And I think they are really kind of showing people what it means to not have a Eurocentric approach to maps.
So speaking of things that you're working on or hope to do, what are you currently working on? And are there particular sorts of maps or projects revolving around maps that you'd like to do?
So I'm working on a couple of maps, but the books will only be out, you know, next year, because publishing timelines are very far in advance like that. I'm also finishing up art for a board game about Malaysian markets that I'm making with friends. So it's called Ban San. It's with Arts at Penang. It's a fully illustrated game about being a vendor at a local market, dealing with wholesalers, other vendors, customers, and then you have events, you know, like festivals. Oh, COVID happened, that kind of thing. We had an interview come out about it in Options at Edge recently, and we will be opening pre-orders very soon. The game's supposed to launch in July. You know, and that's a kind of project where basically I had a lot of creative freedom and a lot of time to explore with new techniques. And those are the kind of projects that I would really like to do. I think I'm not suited for, you know, like very fast-paced commercial work, like advertising work. I've just decided at this point that's not the thing for me. Like, I don't work best in that situation. And so book maps where you have a lot of time to sit down and think and just happily, you know, nerd out about research for a while. Maps that kind of, yeah, I would like to continue working on the maps that sort of push the boundaries a bit of like what we expect to see in a fantasy map. So, and I've been trying to do that in small ways and big ways. So things like, you know, we don't need compass roses, we don't need legends. Like those are all very, very specific map-making devices. It's styles, you know, like instead of it always looking like a certain kind of map, we could use a different style. And then eventually, if the story, you know, permits, like the map could be part of a puzzle in the story or that sort of thing.
Karis, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thanks, really enjoyed it.
We've been speaking with Karis Loke, an illustrator, about illustrating maps. Let us know, again, we asked this question earlier, do you pay close attention to the maps that come right at the start of books? Do you have some favourites or titles that you think have done it particularly well and you want to share? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. Brings us to footnotes. So it's a quick one because I think that we covered so much ground with Karis in our interview about map making that I don't want to belabor the point. But I thought that we could spend this side of things talking about our experience as readers who are sometimes very appreciative of the maps and sometimes, frankly, very negligent.
Negligent is right. So I will say that when I first realized as a very young reader that there were such a thing as books or worlds that came with maps, if I'm not mistaken, my very first experience of that was probably with a copy of Robin Hood. And there was a map of Sherwood Forest and the adjacent cities and all of that. And I remember being just fascinated, right? Mm. But you're right that unless visually there's something very strong about it, I tend not to recall them very much. Or if there was a real need for me to keep referring back to the map to figure out where people were in terms of moving across this landscape.
I realize I have a fraught relationship with maps. And that comes from the fact that I have a fraught relationship with the notion of spatial learning in general. So I've always been somebody, and I think that this is very logical when you think about the path that my life has taken. I've always been someone who has learned better or understood things better through words. So I process directions better when they're written down and I can read and reread them. I know I've spoken about this to people recently and I've started to recognize that it's a bit of a rarity that most people seem to function better. That's a generality, but many people prefer learning through pictures or through videos. But I've always preferred written directions. And because of that, maps sometimes did my head in because I would feel a little bit dumb for not being able to properly track or understand distances or to follow things. And that's my own problem, I think. I put too much pressure on the story to make sense through maps or on myself to understand the story through maps. And it's only as an older reader, a little bit freed from this sort of weird self-declared pressure, that I've been able to appreciate maps and refer to them and be able to understand what exactly they're trying to tell me.
Mm, and the what exactly are they trying to tell me also can really vary from story to story, right? Because I know, for instance, that Narnia was one of those books that I kept referring to the map to again and again, and especially because mine was a collected anthology, because you start off with the kids going through the wardrobe at one part of Narnia, and then later the whole story with Prince Caspian happens somewhere else. The witch lives somewhere else. Mm. And I kept wanting to know where they were, you know, in Narnia. I wanted to know how far they were traveling, what the landscape looked like. So for that, the map serves a great purpose. But then when you think of something like Winnie the Pooh and the map of the 100-acre wood that's there, and it's sort of meant to look like it's drawn by Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
So sure, it gives you a kind of spatial awareness, but I think more than that, it maybe makes you feel like you're part of a story in a particular way.
Vibes.
Yeah, vibes, which Karis, again, wasn't maybe a fan of the word, but it makes you feel like you're part of the story. It makes you feel like you found a map that someone drew. And I think there are various things that these maps can do.
So for me, when the maps are aesthetically pleasing or works of art in their own right, that's when I feel as if the book is welcoming me. So I think at its best, and again, like I've said, a little bit of a tense relationship with maps. So for me, increasingly, I feel like a map is the book's way or the author's way of welcoming me into the world, like you're saying, off the book and off the story and saying right away, this is where you're going to be. This is what we're going to explore. Are you excited? And then going off from there, it's similar in some ways to books that feel the need to list characters at the start or a family tree.
So I love family trees, but again, only useful once you've dived into the book, right? So it's interesting for me when the family tree comes at the front, because sometimes I'm like, would this make more sense at the
most
at
of
the
them
back?
Come at the front, though.
Yeah, yeah. Because I usually skip past it. I never read the family tree in the beginning. I tend to start reading the book halfway and then come back and look at the family tree.
Sometimes when there's a lot of characters, I'm like, you're warning me, aren't you? or a family tree. It feels like a warning that's being issued. Like, here are all the people. Here are all the people. Just know that it's going to be this kind of book. But of course, it's also, again, a signal to, I've got you. If you're not sure.
Yeah, if you forget, you can come back here and check.
Yeah, if you're wondering why there are three Luigis and it's because it's like a generational thing, then here it is, you know, Luigi Gennetto is whatever, Luigi someone else. So yeah, I think that overall, I guess the question for me is, as a reader, is the map a tool or an aesthetic thing for you?
I think if you're talking about the kind of maps, that Caris Loc designs, they are, of course, very much aesthetic. They're beautiful to look at. They make you feel things just visually as well. But I think they are a tool to also understand the feel of the world. I think the map kind of signposts what things may look like in the world. If you were to journey along this way, how might people dress? What would the landscape look like? And so then that's a tool, right? It's not just about it being pretty.
Yes, I can see where you're coming from. I think increasingly they've become ways for me to enter the mood of the book. That's the primary purpose that they serve. But I do pay close attention to them now in a way that I didn't used to when I was younger.
I don't think I still do, to be honest. I think I still go halfway through the book, come back. And that might be because I always need the story to kind of situate me on the map.
Fair enough. Let us know. Again, it's the question we've been asking throughout. Are you the kind of reader who appreciates a good map in a book? Do you pay close attention to it? Do you have examples you want to share of people who've done it really well? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Of course, you can also write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
You've been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.